the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into a special edition Bet the Board podcast. No, not talking NFL football. Instead, delving into the college football ranks with our bowl game bonanza. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my co-host, Payne Insider. Payne, you have a good holiday weekend, my friend?
Everything was great. Ate too much, drank too much, and here we are on Monday.
That just sounds like another weekend during the football season. But, Payne, we're not alone on this podcast. I know we promised our loyal listeners a very special guest, and we have one that probably needs no introduction in the college football community. You can follow him on Twitter, at Clay Travis, no BGID anymore. You can see his outstanding work at FS1 and read him at Outkick the Coverage. Clay, welcome into Bet the Board. This may be the most sophisticated gambling podcast you've ever partaken in the past.
Well, then there's going to be a lot of people tweeting me about what a loser I am when it comes to analyzing why I make the bets that I do. So I'm looking forward to those tweets for sure.
Well, there's a good chance, I mean, that we can use you as the litmus test and kind of the public indicator, although hard for Payne and I to really pick apart your resume. I mean, 59% during the college football regular season is no disappointing track record, to say the least.
Yeah, so far it's been a good year. 59%, I bet a lot of games, and I'm at 60% in the bowl games. So I've been at least somewhat consistent. Obviously, the big bowl game still to come. It's where the money is to be won.
Yeah, and one thing I want to, before we get into breaking down the bowl games, and for those folks wondering what the agenda will look like today, we'll obviously cover the big New Year's Six games. We'll finish up with the two college football semifinals, hit on the four other big games initially, and then try and lightly touch on some of the marquee games involving power programs that you may or may not want to bet and watch, but judging by the ratings, clearly everybody is tuned into all these bowl games. Clay, want to give you a chance. I know Payne took a shot. Our producer Sam took a shot. This NBA three-point challenge, and Payne, feel free to throw out a number here with any stipulations. We want to know exactly what would be a good record for Clay if he's going to go out there and shoot 100 from the NBA distance.
Yeah, I kind of alluded to what my thoughts were. The three-point line, it's 22 feet back. When you actually get out onto the court and you see how far that is, it's pretty tough to see Clay doing anything more than 23.5 out of 100 shots. Same spot. We'll even give you the women's ball. There's an event date, though. You can't really prepare for this. It has to be done before January 1st, 2016. So 23.5 is the number.
There's a possibility that Foss is going to come and bring a camera crew to two different things. I'm actually insulted, not so much at the low numbers that people are putting up for what they think they'll hit out of 100 NBA threes, but some people don't think I can bench press 225 pounds, which is just
One of those people that doesn't think you can bench press 225 pounds.
Why do you not? What do you think I can bench?
I'm going to say that I think you can do that without straining, whether it's your pec or completely wrecking your shoulder, making you ill-equipped to pick up your three small children. I'm going to set it at 205, and we'll go with a two-repetition max there at 205.
Oh, no, I can do – so, I mean, for a long time, I've been doing what I call the pyramid, which is I warm up at 145 and knock out 10. Then I go to 165 for 8, 185 for 6, 4 at 205, and 2 at 225 to finish. And I've been doing that for a decade. So, I mean, this is Kate.
Are you the kind of guy, though, that can squat more than he can – I mean, should say bench
No.
more than he can squat?
I can bench more than I can squat, no doubt.
Payne, it sounds like your beach workouts down there in Miami.
Yeah, not so much. I'm not sure I could do that pyramid that Clay just pulled off, but for doing that for a decade, that's pretty impressive. It sounds like he's got a win in the bag.
Well, I mean,
when
this is a man
in college. Clay, I mean, my goal was to get 225 because of the NFL combine. Like, I just wanted to be able to do it at least once. And I got up to 4 or 5, I think, at my peak. I'm sure I'm past my athletic prime, but 225 once is cake.
All right, we may have to throw out a little prop bet out there on Twitter when the team at Fox decides they want to shoot you doing that. All these athletic challenges, I'm a little bit worried about the kind of shape you'll come back to Nashville and after shooting the college football preview, which you guys can see on FS1 Tuesday night, I believe, Clay?
Yeah, we're taping tomorrow. We'll be on multiple times all day Tuesday, and then Wednesday and Thursday we will also be on doing our show.
And Clay also has a daily show on Periscope. I encourage everybody to check out. But we're here to pick some bowl games. And so before we actually get into the games themselves, Payne, wanted to get your thought more from the professional side of things on how you approach handicapping the bowls. Do you go through and look at conferences, individual matchups? Obviously, reading plays a big part of this. Do you bet a lot of the games in advance? What have you found to be the most successful in the past when you approach the college football postseason?
You know, I think the first one is motivation. That's the obvious. Disappointed or happy to be there? Is it your first bowl game? When's the last time you won a bowl game? Location of the bowl. We saw Akron traveling to Boise. Who on earth wants to go to Idaho? Probably just the people who operate in Akron, Ohio. So, you know, that's something that you need to look at. Strength of schedule, enormous this time of year. You alluded to reading. Some teams are playing for the future. Maybe they want to try a new up-tempo system. So reading's key. Suspensions, injuries, huge. Coaching is also humongous. You want to look at those ATS records. There's certain guys multiple weeks to prepare that are just going to have a huge, huge edge. Momentum is another big one. You're going to pay a premium in the market when teams finish strong, 5, 6, 7 wins in a row. Now all of a sudden you've had 3 or 4 weeks off. The momentum subsides a little bit, and your market price is just ridiculous. We saw a perfect example of that with South Florida. And then later in the bowl season, when everybody's motivated, I think you got to look at those game matchups in the handicapping angles. They'll come into play a little bit. Offensive efficiency versus Team B's defensive efficiency, things of that nature. Red zone efficiency, third down efficiency, and those are more so the keys. More handicapping in game matchups later in the season, later in the bowl season, motivation early in the season.
Now, Clay, Payne has been doing this a lot longer than even I have in any semblance of a professional capacity. I know you've come a long way in your handicapping since we started Let It Ride a few years ago when you asked some pretty basic questions, and now your market entry shows that you have an understanding of things. What's some of the advice that you would offer new bettors that may be going into the bowl season for their first foray to try and do this a little bit more seriously with some realistic expectations to turn a profit this holiday season?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what helps is knowing a conference or knowing at least one side of the equation pretty well. And, you know, the example that I'll use for me is I've pretty much watched every SEC football game that has mattered for the last 25 years. So I can kind of think back and have recollection about how games have gone, how coaches have done against each other. So I think that tends to be one of my kind of best advantages, that I've actually watched a lot of these games. I'm not an X's and O's guy. I'm not going to be the guy who's able to tell you, you know, the distinction of what's going to happen with a 3-4 defense playing against a 4-3. I'm not going to be the guy who's the expert there. But I do think I can kind of get into, you know, the most important position, which is the one I would tell everybody to pay attention to as well, quarterback play. How consistent has a quarterback been? What are his ups and downs over the course of a season, over the course of a career? How reliable is that player? The college football is becoming a lot like the NFL, where I would say it's a tandem situation with the coach and with the quarterback that matters the most. And so those are the things that jump out at me immediately kind of off the top. The other thing is, nowadays I sit around and watch pretty much every game that goes on. I think watching the games, the other thing I would say, and I know you're big on this, Todd, is I think you got to go look at the box scores. One of my favorite things to do after the games are over for the teams that I care about, it's just go back and look at the numbers. And sometimes you get a totally aberrant result. And I'll give you a good example. Arkansas losing to Toledo this year. It was something that would never happen, right? Like, and if you looked at that box score, to put up over 500 yards of offense, to put up over 300 yards of offense over somebody else and lose and only score 9 or 10 points or whatever they did, it's almost impossible to pull off. So sometimes I think football fans and college football fans in particular believe that whatever happens one time is going to happen again and again and again. And the reality is it's a probability-based business. Sometimes crazy things happen. Don't allow the crazy to influence you when you come to analyzing the overall team.
No, you're exactly right. I think part of that contributes to the fallacy that people think you can hit 65, 70% in this sport when it is really a game of chance and an isolated incident. We say all the time on our NFL version of this podcast, and Payne has drummed it into my head, there's plenty of good bets that lose and there's plenty of bad bets that win. I think the casual gambler loses sight of the forest through the trees. He becomes infatuated with one particular team based on one performance, and you're exactly right. When you look at the box scores, that'll often tail tell you the tale of what actually transpired sometimes instead of the final score. Payne mentioned one thing about motivation, and then we'll close the book on this chapter. Clay, can you explain why we've seen the SEC struggle in the postseason so much? We know this conference. We know how odds makers respect them. The narrative all season long, the Big Ten's better. Well, clearly the betting market doesn't agree with that. But is there a thought process for the SEC that, hey, if we're not playing in the biggest games, we don't actually care and don't put any emphasis on our postseason results?
Yeah, I think there's some legitimacy to that. I think it's easier to get fired up to play against regular conference rivals than it is this one team that you may see one time, you know, all year. And I do think that's a little bit of a challenge. The other thing is, I think, again, go back and look at the box scores. I mean, you can change two outcomes in the season last year, for instance, in the bowl games. The SEC went 7-5 straight up. The SEC West was awful. I tend to think it was just an aberrant result. I think as you look at the overall outcome, and the SEC East was clearly inferior to the SEC West all year. Well, the SEC East comes out and goes 5-0 in the bowl games. I think motivation did play in there. They wanted to prove they weren't as bad as everybody thought. SEC West comes out and goes 2-5. And I think there were some results there of people believing they're as good as that they're reading their press clippings. SEC ends up going 7-5 overall. But if Auburn doesn't lose in overtime to Wisconsin, and if Alabama, I didn't talk about Alabama, let's say LSU just gets their touchdown that they scored actually counted that they missed against Notre Dame, the SEC goes 9-3, and it's the best bowl season in the history, even with the loss of Alabama to Ohio State. If Alabama beats Ohio State, which I tend to think they would have the majority of the times, if they played 100 times, Alabama would have won 58 of those, let's say. I think that everybody would have been saying, boy, the SEC is as strong as it ever has been.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes a lot of sense, and we know motivation clearly plays a big role. LSU, one of those teams who's shown uninspired efforts playing in second-tier games. We'll hit on them in a little bit. For those Bet the Board listeners new to the College Football Edition, heck, we all are. It's the first time we've done this. That man you're hearing there, the SEC apologist, Clay Travis, you can follow him on Twitter, at Clay Travis. You can follow my co-host, Payne Insider, at Payne Insider. You can follow me at Todd Furman. Subscribe SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us at toddstake.com. And we mentioned some of the power programs getting up for motivation. The Peach Bowl, a prime example of that, as we see Florida State taking on Houston. Florida State, a 7-point favorite total in this game at 55 right now. Payne, you're a big Florida State guy. We know about the departure of Everett Golson. Sean McGuire clearly now has no one looking over his shoulder. Dalvin Cook healthier than he's been. My power numbers for this game, if it's played during the regular season, are closer to 2 touchdowns. Do we feel this is too much of a bookmaker line looking to try and establish good balance as we see the public coming in on the Cougars?
Yeah, certainly the line tells you Houston is the side, and I think the lazy way to handicap this game is saying, you know, FSU doesn't want to be here, and this is Houston's Super Bowl. But if this game were to be played in the regular season, and some of the sharpest math guys I speak to have this even higher than what you predicted, they had it as high as 17 in some places. When you kind of look at some comparable moments, FSU was in a similar spot in 2012. They faced NIU with Lynch, who supposedly had more motivation, and FSU just drubbed them by 3 touchdowns. So I think when you try to pinpoint some motivation for FSU, how about Dalvin Cook? I mean, snubbed for the Heisman invite to New York. How about Sean McGuire, who never seems to be good enough but continues to battle his way to get this starting job? And I think this game for Sean McGuire might propel him to his senior year, where, again, he'll have to battle a freshman phenom in Malik Henry for the starting QB job. So I think this is a big game motivation-wise for McGuire, big motivation game for Cook. And I think Greg Ward Jr. is as athletic as he is, and this is a 3-star kid. He's 5'11", 170 pounds, soaking wet. So let's see how that works against FSU's defense. Jimbo Fisher has shown well in bowl games. Again, this is a bookmaker number. I would suspect potentially some sharp money on Houston, but I will be not on that side and maybe even look to FSU if this continues to come down off that key number 7.
Well, and you mentioned Malik Henry. He said the crab legs in Tallahassee were great, but he liked the cornbread a lot more in some of his comments during his recruiting visit. Clay, we know that they're not rolling out the red carpet for you in Tallahassee anytime soon. You mentioned the eye test, and I'm sure you've watched Houston plenty of times as a mid-major phenom. I know they don't hail from the MAC like your beloved Bowling Green. But Florida State-Houston, what's your primary takeaway here?
We were talking about motivation earlier. This is the ultimate motivation game to me, and why I'm steering clear. I'm not going to bet on this game because I think Houston obviously wants to demonstrate that their success all season long is not a fluke. They want to take on Florida State. They have a lot to prove. They have a talented quarterback. that seems like a recipe for a mess for Florida State. Now, for Florida State, I would go on the flip side. Look, they've been in the national championship picture the past 2 years. They won the national title playing, obviously, against Auburn. They lost to Oregon in a playoff last year. And this year they're going to Atlanta, which is not a great trip. They're playing against a team that is not that exciting to them. I just see Florida State as this is an ultimate motivation game. I don't think there's a lot of Florida State guys sitting around hyped all day for the past 2 weeks getting ready for this game. Like, I can't wait to go out and prove that we belong against Houston, whereas I do think Houston feels that way. And so I just don't feel that comfortable touching it. This seems like a line that is fraught with peril. If I were going to play it, I might well play the over. Because I do think that that there's a decent chance Houston could come out and have some success, even though it's a very talented Florida State defense. Throw some wrinkles early, have some success, score, I don't know, 28 points or so. It wouldn't shock me then if FSU's also scoring 28, and basically you're at the over then. So if I had to play it, I would take the over, but I just don't feel comfortable trying to analyze the motivational value for FSU of this game.
An important lesson there for a lot of our casual gamblers out there. You don't have to bet every one of these marquee games, and if Clay's espousing that type of virtue and patience, it holds true. I will say one thing, the American Athletic Conference, the darlings of college football throughout the course of the year, still plenty of bowl games left to be played, but if you look at the resume compiled by Cincinnati, UConn, South Florida, Tulsa defensively, and Temple, not exactly a ringing endorsement for a league that should be mentioned among some of the other power conferences. Fiesta Bowl on New Year's Day, Ohio State and Notre Dame. Some major news breaking this morning about the status of Ezekiel Elliott. Will he be in or will he be out, potentially facing suspension? Ohio State, a 6.5-point favorite. Total in this game, 57 at BetOnline. We've talked about focus. Ohio State, defending national champs, arguably should have been in the college football playoff if things had broken the right way. And I'll make the case that Notre Dame is the best offense Ohio State has faced. Clay, when you look at these two football teams, again, fan bases that you're near and dear to, I know, how do you begin your handicap of these particular blue bloods?
I like the over. I think both these teams are going to move the football. I am betting the over in this game. If I have to choose who I think is going to win, I think Ohio State is. I think they're going to continue to play as well as they have, played all season. And we saw the best game they played all year against Michigan. I think that's going to continue. I like the side of Ohio State in this game, much to the chagrin of Buckeye fans everywhere. But I like the over more than I do betting on either Ohio State or Notre Dame. I think both teams are going to score some points.
Maybe Urban Meyer decides to send you a Christmas card then, if that's the case, with your longstanding relationship there. Payne, when you break down Ohio State and Notre Dame, we've talked about this game, I mean, off the air in great detail. You know my feelings in this particular matchup. Which way are you beginning to lean as far as the handicap's concerned?
Well, I think Clay actually nailed it on the head. There has been significant sharp money on the over, came in over 54. There's still some 56 out there, which is the key number. So if you're going to go over, you're going to want to go over sooner rather than later. From a side perspective, I would be looking at Notre Dame here if I could get 7. The only thing that scares me to death is obviously Urban Meyer, who just owns bowl season, 10-3 against the spread. Brian Kelly has not fared very well at all during bowl season, so that scares me a little bit. And the big question mark here for Notre Dame is, can they stop the run? Have not been able to do it all season, allowing 4.5 yards per carry. So again, I think that plays into Clay's angle here, along with a lot of the professional bettors going over in this game.
Yeah, for me, I definitely respect Urban Meyer's track record here. I actually think the dog offers a lot of value. You see Ohio State players getting into trouble off the field. We know Adolphus Washington missed the game, Ezekiel Elliott. I just have to question their focus. I know drawing Notre Dame probably gets those juices going in the postseason, but for a side who came into the season AP number one, a lot of us talked about them power rating better than almost any college football team we've seen in recent memory. Just don't see this being the way that they expected to finish their season. So expect a slightly flat effort, and we'll gladly back the dog here. Rose Bowl, Stanford and Iowa. No one expected the Iowa Hawkeyes to be at this point in the season. You have to give them a ton of credit for an improbable season. They went through the regular portion of their schedule undefeated. Line move in this game has been all over the place. We've seen the number go as high as 7. Total opened as low as 49.5, and it's out to 53. My question, Payne, when we begin to try and handicap this game, you know my feelings in Iowa. I thought they were a fraud all season long. I actually was impressed with the way they played against Michigan State. Do they have enough firepower led by C.J. Beathard to match up with Kevin Hogan and Christian McCaffrey?
This is one of the toughest games for me to handicap. Initially, I was going to jump all in here on Iowa, needed a touchdown to do so. But the way they lost the Big Ten Championship scares me a little bit. Stanford, I know you're in love with Stanford, but their defense is not very good. I think Iowa will have some success.
Hey, hold on a second here. I was in love with Stanford when I had a ticket on them at 60-1 to win the national championship. Our marriage is officially over after they let Oregon go into the farm and beat them. So I have no allegiance to the Cardinal here. So, you know, hold off on that.
Yeah, so this this feels kind of like a rock fight for me. I don't really have anything that I really like in this game at this point. I have to do a little more digging. Iowa, if it got to 6.5, 7, that probably, you know, garner a value bet from me here, but don't love this game at all. I think there's much, much better bets to be made, but I think we'll see some professional money on the dog here in Iowa. Yes, they are extremely overrated. But Stanford, man, I don't know how great they are either. And that defense really scares me. One of the most overrated units in all of college football.
Are you surprised by the difference in opinion as far as where this total opened? We saw some books 49.5, others 53, and then some came in the middle. And even seeing the slow trickle of over money since then?
I think when you look at bowl season, there's, you know, a lot of guys like to open early, take some of that early money. Limits are extremely lower. Positioning on some of these games, not necessarily true of the intent of what the end goal is going to be here. So for me, you look at a sharp book that opened 53, it's remained 53. I think if this gets, you know, much higher to a key number, we could start to see some under money.
Clay, I know you were a big fan of this Iowa team. Said all the accolades were somewhat deserving after having watched you each week on Countdown to Kickoff. Are you backing the Hawkeyes for their first trip to the Rose Bowl since 1991 when they lost to a Mark Brunell-led Washington team? Oddly enough for our friend Joel Klatt, the Colorado Buffaloes finished the AP poll number one that year, the same Colorado team that has the longest postseason drought of any team hailing from a Power 5 conference.
That's incredible research. You should give your research assistant a raise. I like the over here. In fact, I love it. And to me, you were asking earlier about, like, as kind of a casual, fun gambler who enjoys doing this but isn't trying to make a living doing it. I oftentimes love betting over-unders more than I do taking a side. And to me, it comes into analyzing whose style is going to predominate in a game. And to me, in this Stanford and Iowa game, Iowa has scored at times, and they can score. And every game other than that early kickoff that they played against Northwestern and maybe the second week of the season, Stanford has gone 30 points or more. So I think Stanford is going to score, and I think Iowa is going to score to match them. And I ultimately like the over by far the most of all the bets on here. I also like Stanford for under a touchdown. If you get it around 6, I think it's 6 now, 6.5, whatever it is, I think Stanford is really good, and I like their motivation in this game. A little bit nervous about Iowa being able to fill up the Rose Bowl because Stanford won't have anybody there, and it's basically going to be a default home game in California for Iowa. But I am on the over big, and then secondarily, I would be on Stanford.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the travel. Stanford, obviously, not exactly one of those college football powerhouses in terms of bringing armies with them. I've spoken to folks pretty close to Iowa. They say they're seeing this as a great secondary option of being in the college football playoff. They're going to travel in droves from all over since it has been such a long drought since they played in the Granddaddy Mall. A game, honestly, listening to both of you guys making compelling cases for every which way side and total, one that I don't think I'll be playing unless maybe this number gets to 7. I can make a slight case for Iowa, but in the meantime, we'll be sitting on the sidelines. A bowl game getting all the attention for the wrong reasons, in my opinion, taking place in New Orleans on New Year's Day will be the nightcap. Ole Miss against Oklahoma State. You're looking at the Rebels, a 7-point favorite. Total in this one, 67.5 at BetOnline. Hugh Freeze's team didn't show up last year. TCU absolutely embarrassed them in the Peach Bowl. I have to imagine Ole Miss will be a little bit more focused. The major questions on Oklahoma State side, the health of Mason Rudolph. Will he or won't he be the starting quarterback for Coach Gundy? J.W. Wash, clearly not as dynamic a passer, a run-first guy. But, Clay, the real story and question I have for you being so close to the SEC, what's going on with this program and the truth behind the Kembeachy brothers, whether it's Robert or Denzel, seems to be an issue and a potential distraction for the Rebels in this one.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think they have an issue with something that I think a lot of guys in college, both athletes and otherwise, do, and this is synthetic marijuana. Which is a lot more dangerous than regular marijuana, but doesn't show up on drug tests. So a lot of college kids tend to think that it's not as dangerous. And so I don't think it's a problem unique to Ole Miss. I think it's just one that is being kind of emblematic of a larger issue. These guys are representative of a more substantial concern that there should be for a lot of college athletes. Because, again, I think there are a lot of them using the synthetic marijuana to avoid testing positive on drug tests. I think, having said that, I think Ole Miss is going to destroy Oklahoma State in this game. I think there's a substantial difference in overall talent. I think on the line of scrimmage, you just look at the star rankings. Even without Kimbichi, Hugh Freeze has recruited really, really well, and he has got an incredible stable of talent. Chad Kelly's a great quarterback. You saw what happened last year with that performance. I think Laquon Treadwell, Laramie Tunsil, both going to be top 10 picks, will go out really with a bang. And this is the first time that Ole Miss has played in the Sugar Bowl since 1970. And for old-school SEC fans, the Sugar Bowl was the ultimate destination. And so Ole Miss is going to fill that place up. They will sell out the Sugar Bowl. This is the equivalent. This is as good of a get as Ole Miss could have other than getting into the playoffs. And I just think Oklahoma State has been exposed a little bit when they've gone up against really, really high-quality caliber teams, Oklahoma, Baylor. I think they will get exposed again with Hugh Freeze and time to prepare, and especially after how bad Ole Miss was last time. I just don't see this one as being close. I love Ole Miss.
Well, you mentioned Oklahoma State's struggle against top-tier teams, and I'll make the case if you dig into the box score for their win against TCU, where they came through outright catching six. They were actually outplayed. If it wasn't for Trevon Boykin turnovers, Oklahoma State probably loses that game. Payne, I know a lot of the professionals, and I'm not quite sure where the mass guys sit, but Ole Miss, a team that a lot of folks never really dropped much lower than 12th all season despite losses to Memphis and struggles defensively against the likes of Arkansas. What's the professional sentiment on Ole Miss, Oklahoma State in the Sugar Bowl?
I'm sure this isn't what everybody expected, but Clay, Travis, hit the nail on the head here. This is one of the largest bets so far that I've seen from professional bettors. Open 6.5. You're now looking about a 7.5 across the board here. And I think the news of the Kimbichi brothers probably, you know, gives some motivation to this team here in Ole Miss. I think they're kind of cracked down a little bit. Embarrassing bowl performance last year. Clay alluded to how prestigious the Sugar Bowl is, and I am just not a huge believer in Oklahoma State, one of the more fraudulent teams this year, extremely overrated. Huge question with Mason Rudolph playing. If he doesn't play, good God, this is going to get ugly. We like Ole Miss here as well.
That's more of what I thought. I look at this game. Ole Miss, interestingly enough, has struggled with time of possession, but I guess when you score as quickly as the Rebels have throughout the year, you put up points in bunches, and you have something along the lines of that Oregon mentality. For those folks not sure you've been listening to for the first 20 minutes, you can follow Clay Travis of Outkick the Coverage at Clay Travis on Twitter, Payne Insider at Payne Insider, and you can follow me as well at Todd Furman. And make sure, if you haven't already, subscribe to the Bet the Board podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, or toddstake.com. And, guys, I don't want to get bogged down in some of the second-tier bowl games. We know there's plenty of opportunity. Folks are going to bet them. There's usually quite a bit more value than when you have some of the power programs going toe-to-toe. So I have a bunch in front of me, but rather open the floor up to you guys. If there was a game or two that you thought offered a whole lot of gambling value and perspective, I guess, Clay, we can start with you. You said you're obviously very familiar with some of the SEC teams. What are some of the second-tier games that have your eye between now and the end of bowl season?
I've got the over on Tennessee Northwestern. I bet it early when it came out as a 7-point line, I think is what I got it opening as soon as the bowls were announced. It kind of has immediately popped up. I feel like, again, going to what the style of the game is going to be played, I think Tennessee is going to score some points in this game. But I think they'll give up some to Northwestern as well. But I don't think this is going to be one of those 13-10 style games that Northwestern probably would like to play. Over-under, I think, right now is around 47.5, so I like the over there. The other one that I bet on that you hate, we talked about this already, is I really think LSU is going to control and dictate the pace in that Texas Tech game. And I think they're going to do it by running the football with Leonard Fournette. And so when I see a 73.5 number and LSU has not been over 69 in total points in any game they've played this year, and that includes a game against a team like Western Kentucky that wants to score as many as they possibly can against Ole Miss, which has been explosive at times. I just think this LSU team, they're going to dictate pace, tempo, and control it by running the football. And so I love the under 73.5 in the Texas Tech game.
Payne, there are a couple of the second-tier games that really have caught your eye. But one thing, Clay, that I'll say to that, if you look at the way Arkansas played against Texas Tech last year, I know it was a little bit of a different complexion of a game versus Texas Tech. 49-28 was the score there. I just wonder, even if you try and dictate pace and tempo, Texas Tech hasn't been able to stop anybody. You look at their defensive efficiency metrics, even if LSU is milking the clock, they're going to be able to rip off massive gains. And against the 124th ranked rush defense, 109th against the pass, and 121st in defensive efficiency, I think Tech's going to be able to score. And to Western Kentucky's credit, they offer at least a little bit of resistance, more so than your man crush Cliff Kingsbury can do.
Although, remember that Texas Tech this year held Arkansas somehow to 24 points, which may be another one of those aberrant results, because I think Tech won 35-24, if I'm not mistaken, off the top of my head. Probably the best game that Tech played all year, other than the one they could have won against Texas TCU when they got the bounce ball kicked at the end of the game, where they honestly they should have won that game. But I understand the argument. I think LSU defensively is a little bit better than people giving credit for. And with a lot of time to prepare, everything else, Les Miles, I think they'll play well because Les is going to be back. I think LSU will cover and win, but I just don't think this game, I think it'll be something like, 40 to 28, which would be 68. It'd be right around the height that LSU's given up all year, but you're still almost a touchdown under.
It makes sense. I can't argue with the logic and thought process, even if I disagree completely on that game, but that's what we're here for. Payne, games that have really caught your eye, not involving those big six.
I think you have to look at UNC. It's probably a different handicap now as a three-point favorite in climbing, but we took UNC as a dog. When you look at Baylor's QB, Johnson, just 39% of his passes are completed to his team. He's not overly efficient on the ground either. UNC did lose the ACC championship game, but even if they won that, I didn't think they were making a playoff. This has been a great year for UNC, and you can kind of put some sprinkles on the cake with a win here. It's a senior-laden team. When you look at Baylor, on the other hand, this was a team that was supposed to make the Final Four, and now they're playing in a pre-New Year's bowl game. The one thing that would scare me a little bit is UNC has had trouble stopping the run. They're 89th in the country in that regard, but they have 4 weeks to prepare for a one-dimensional offense without a pass threat from Johnson. Corey Coleman out. I think UNC improves in that category significantly. I'm not sure I would chase the UNC money at this point, but that was one of our bigger bowl bets. I think Auburn makes a compelling case as well. We saw what Babers leaving Bowling Green did. I think that's the closest comparison to Fuente leaving Memphis. This is a huge game for Malzahn in Auburn. It's a virtual home game. Memphis is that dreaded public dog, and I think this is Auburn or nothing, and I think you have to go now. Three is not going to last in the marketplace at all. And one game I kind of wanted to get Clay's thoughts on was Florida-Michigan. Todd, I know me and you spoke on this. We initially really liked the dog here, cooled on it a little bit, but I'd love to hear Clay's thoughts.
Well, I think Treon Harris is one of the worst quarterbacks to ever play at a decent team in the SEC, and so I can't back any team that Treon Harris is quarterbacking right now. I do think the defense for Florida is outstanding, and I played as soon as this game came out. I think it was 41.5 or 41, the under, and I think it's down to 39 now. I think it's going to be an ugly game. If Florida wins, it'll be something like a 13-10 type game, and they'll just actually be able to throttle that Michigan offense. There's going to be a lot of running the ball, short game, not that many plays. I don't necessarily dislike Florida given the point. I think the problem is that, again, I just can't bet on Treon Harris. I've watched every snap that he's taken this year, and he's atrocious. And so it's not just a matter of him being a bad quarterback. It's that he actually is at times appearing to play for the other team. I mean, he's going to give up points. I think Florida needs to run the ball almost every play.
It's impressive that you said he's the worst quarterback you've seen since living in Nashville. You have to watch Vandy every single Saturday, and I'm not sure they've had a relevant quarterback since Jay Cutler left. Sam, I know you have strong feelings on some of these games as well. I wanted to get your take on some of your best bets. Maybe this Florida-Michigan game has really crossed your list.
Yeah, Clay said if Florida wins, when Florida wins, they're going to beat Michigan. I'm so sick of this Michigan team. No, listen, I'm in Big Ten country, so a lot of people have thought that the Big Ten is finally taking over the SEC. But like you guys said, when you get to the bowl season, the results speak for themselves. This is all Jim Harbaugh love. I mean, this is all it is. Jim Harbaugh laying 4 points against Jim McElwain and Treon Harris. – They They scored, what, 17 points the last 2 weeks? And I love that because I love a good poo fight, guys. I love that. The fact that I get a team nobody wants to buy, getting more than a field goal, more than four in some places, and they've got way more team speed. I think Jake Rudock is trash. I've seen him play horrible against Indiana, against Minnesota. He was awful against Ohio State. The guy's not much better than Treyon Harris, so I'll take Florida plus the points. I think they win. And then, Clay, I think your Vols are going to run all over Northwestern. Again, for me, it's the speed. Northwestern does not have a lot of speed. Freshman quarterback Thorson has really been bad in the biggest games. I mean, they missed Michigan State. They missed Ohio State. They didn't really play any of the big boys. And when they did, they were outscored 70-10 against Michigan and against Iowa. So I'll go with Tennessee, and I'll go with Florida.
That's a good example,
Furman, you like to talk about rankings. And the fact that Northwestern is 10-2, a lot of people, I think, wow, you know, Northwestern should be better than Tennessee because of the rankings. But I think the market is obviously telling us Tennessee, even at 8-4, substantially better is the expectation than Northwestern.
Northwestern has put together the quietest 10-2 season that I can remember in college football history because they weren't in any major discussions. You look at their results, as Sam mentioned, very unimpressive.
They suck.
And Tennessee, a team that I think is on the ascent. Now, I know, Clay, your feelings about Butch, but they're set up to not only win the SEC East, but win the SEC and maybe be a dark horse, depending on where the market opens as far as futures are concerned. A game that caught my eye as well, Payne, you mentioned momentum and how sometimes it wears off as we go into the offseason. TCU, Oregon, if this game was played in early November, you're looking at the Horned Frogs, maybe close to a touchdown favorite. Oregon finishes the year red hot. Vernon Adams turns the corner. I think this is an outstanding opportunity to get a discount on TCU. The public becomes enamored with what they've seen most recently, and that was Oregon putting up crooked numbers. But I saw enough defensively in the Civil War. I think TCU can exploit them even without their top receiver in the Alamo Bowl Dome. And from games, guys, that maybe no one will care about, but the ratings will be there, to the biggest of them all, the national semifinals, Alabama-Michigan State, the nightcap, but as far as rotation order is concerned, seems like a good place to start. Alabama have been bet up to a 10-point favorite at BetOnline, total at 46. Some interesting statistics with these teams. Net yardage advantage versus bowl teams this year, Alabama plus 150, going 10-1 in those games. Michigan State only a 48-yard edge. The winning the stat war, Alabama 10-1, did that against the 11 bowl teams they faced. Michigan State only 6-4. I know the story will be Michigan State 12-1-1 against the spread as dogs of less than 10 points. But Clay, have a feeling you have some pretty strong sentiments on where your money is going to be in this national semifinal.
I think this is just the best possible matchup for Alabama. Because everything that Michigan State does, they see in practice, except they do it better. I think you can make an argument that Alabama is more talented at 21 of the 22 positions on the field. Now, the one thing that will give you pause is Connor Cook. He could play really well. Here's the downside. When Alabama has gotten exploited defensively, it's typically been with a quarterback like Johnny Manziel, even Josh Dobbs this year, who is mobile, who's able to move the football, who's able to win with his legs, who's able to keep a play alive. Connor Cook is maybe the most stationary quarterback in college football this year. He's not going to move at all. He will be back there in the pocket. And here is something that I don't hear anybody talk about, but should be. This is the best pass rush Alabama defense that Nick Saban has ever had. He's had great defenses before, but typically they don't get to the quarterback. They're better at playing position-style defense. They're dropping back. They're being you know, virtually flawless, like an anaconda sort of strangling you to death and taking away the entire field from you. This team is explosive in the sense that they have a lot of guys who can get to the quarterback. I think that Alabama gets the Connor Cook. Wouldn't shock me if they knock him out of the game. I think the Tide wins by 2 touchdowns.
Payne, we've seen the general public coming in at about a 70% clip on Michigan State. Clearly, the market shows some sharp money on Alabama. Are you on board with that particular move and the total as well, 49 down to 46?
Alabama, certainly the professional side. Public will be on Sparty as a dog, just like they have been all season in the big games. They were on Sparty as a dog against Ohio State, against Michigan. And again, the key to this is Connor Cook's health. You would think the shoulder much better after a month off. He will have to be a competent passer. He's going to have to stand in the pocket, take hits. We know spreading Bama out is the way to beat them. I'm not sure they have the receivers to do that. Michigan State's been ridiculous on third down this season because of Connor Cook. Not sure that's going to happen in a game like this against Alabama's defense. The one concern here is, can Alabama score enough? One thing we have seen Sparty do, they held Michigan to 1.9 yards per rush attempt, Ohio State to 3 yards per rush attempt. Jacob Coker is going to have to be the X factor here. He's made some big throws down the stretch. When you look at how he's closed the season, 5 TDs, 0 interceptions the last 3 weeks, completed over 71% of his passes. So that's going to be the key here. Can Jacob Coker do enough to allow that Alabama offense to just run the ball? Because you know Michigan State, with that much time to prepare, is going to try and stop that facet of the game, and they've done it against two very, very good running teams from comparison's sake to Alabama.
Yeah, and I think we saw from Alabama the one thing late in the year, Jacob Coker trying to throw the deep ball in the Michigan State secondary. You have the opportunity to beat them with a few big plays. Alabama will throw speed out there. I'm not going to say he's going to pick you in par with 10- and 15-yard intermediate routes, but one deep ball may open up some of those running lanes. So for me at this point, I think it's a lay it or don't play it type scenario, but full disclosure, well, it will be in attendance, not a game that I have a wager on, at least at this juncture. The other semifinal game, which I think may be more intriguing, really wanted to see Oklahoma take on Alabama. Of course, we could get that in the national championship. Looking at the Sooners, a four-point favorite, total at 64 at BetOnline in this one. Some interesting things to think about. These two teams a lot closer than people really believe as far as net yardages compared against bowl teams. Clemson plus 160, Oklahoma plus 175 in that category. Oklahoma undefeated on the stat sheet against all bowl opponents they played, going 9-0 in those games. And interesting to note with the Sooners, we can call this the Coach Stoops revenge tour. Oklahoma had 5 losses last year. They've already avenged 4 of them. If they end up beating Clemson down there in the Orange Bowl, it would give them the clean sweep for the season. I think neither of these defenses get enough credit, both top 10 in defensive efficiency. So I'll go to you, Payne. Oklahoma, Clemson, where's the professional money trying to find an investment in this one?
This is one of the toughest games for him because I absolutely hate Bob Stoops. How anyone coined him Big Game Bob is beyond me. 7-10 against the spread in bowl games, and he really, really scares me. That said, I'm not as high on Clemson, haven't been all season, as everybody else. I think they're a one-man show. If Clemson were to play FSU on a neutral field right now, FSU would give them everything they want and more. The key to this game is going to be turnovers for Clemson. 8 turnovers last 3 games, 11 turnovers the last 4 games. Clemson needs to rectify that issue, and I just think Clemson is extremely overrated, and as much as I dislike Bob Stoops here, I think OU is going to be the side. I'm on the sidelines. I do agree with the early position on OU. It opened -1. You're now out to as high as 4. I am a believer in the Oklahoma defense. I think that's probably one of the best units in all of college football. Still not buying Clemson's defense. Notre Dame hangs 22 in a monsoon despite 4 turnovers. South Carolina hangs 32 on you. The third string quarterback for Syracuse hangs 27 on you. I have not bought this Clemson defense all season long. I'm not sure I can buy them here in this game either.
I'll play devil's advocate only on that Clemson defense. I think they were a thin unit that showed some of their best work early in the season, got banged up, and with a month to prepare and get healthy, they're going to look a little bit better. But I would agree, despite being #5 in passing yards allowed and a deeper dive as far as defensive efficiency is concerned, a unit that ranks 7th in the country, I think those numbers slightly misleading. Oklahoma clearly will need to establish the ground game in an area where they've been balanced all season long, 16th on the ground, running the football, 16th through the air. Baker Mayfield, the nation's 2nd most efficient passer, and maybe playing with a chip on his shoulder. Clay, how do you view the Oklahoma-Clemson matchup?
Yeah, I played this early with Oklahoma under a field goal. I think I got him at 2.5. Clemson, interestingly, I bought a national title ticket at 14-1, I think it is, earlier in the season, so I'd be happy if they won. Now that it's up to 4, I probably wouldn't touch it. If I did, I would probably play the over, just because I think that there'll be points to be scored. You know Oklahoma's going to score, and I think Clemson will score on that Oklahoma defense as well. But I think it'll be Oklahoma-Alabama. I think Baker Mayfield, you look at the P. Ryan and Mixon at running backs, that Oklahoma offensive line was really young early in the season. Now those guys are basically sophomores. I think they start 2 true freshman tackles who are obviously incredibly talented but hadn't played very many games, obviously, coming into the season. They've gotten a lot better as the year has gone on. And I just think Baker Mayfield against Deshaun Watson, Baker Mayfield is going to be the more reliable player, not necessarily because he's the better player, but because there's better talent that surrounds him. And I think Oklahoma will cover the 3 or 2.5 that I got earlier. 4 makes me nervous, but I like the over as well.
From the theater of the bizarre, guys, I know we're not always big trend buffs, especially around here. The last 9 bowl games Clemson's competed in, the underdog has gone 8-1 against the spread. And, Clay, before we let you go, I want to leave you with one last question. If we assume that it's Oklahoma-Alabama, and some of the early numbers indicate that Alabama would be about a field goal favor in that particular matchup, does the SEC return to glory and bring a national championship back home to where it belongs, at least in the eyes of Clay Travis?
Yeah, I think so. Not only that, I think Nick Saban leaves. I think there's a good chance he ends up the coach of the Indianapolis Colts next year. I've been saying it since August, and with Andrew Luck there, I think the one thing Saban always thought he missed in the NFL was when they decided to go with Dante Culpepper over Drew Brees. If Saban signs Drew Brees there as a free agent with the Dolphins, much to the chagrin of Dolphins fans who have been very mediocre that whole time, I think he's still there, and I think there's a good chance the Dolphins have won a Super Bowl.
Clay Travis, everyone. Thanks, Clay, for joining us on the first Bet the Board, a bull betting bonanza, or whatever the hell we're going to go with and calling it. You can follow Clay on Twitter, at Clay Travis. See all of his outstanding work. OutkickTheCoverage.com is the website. Check out his Periscope show. For more details, check social media, and you can see him on FS1 throughout the college football postseason. Payne will, of course, break down the national championship when we have that matchup later on our NFL podcast. Any final words of wisdom before we regroup tomorrow to cover NFL Week 17?
Nope, nothing. I think we're good to go. We covered a lot of the bowl games, touched on a lot of the biggest games, and gave some compelling angles in most of the big games as well.
You can follow Payne on Twitter as well, at Payne Insider. Clay, Payne and I are going to have to hit you up for some tailgate suggestions and places to go as we go down to Dallas to take in the national semifinal. But for all the loyal Bet the Board listeners, you guys asked for a college football bowl podcast. Hopefully we delivered, more importantly, with some winners. Discipline is key this time of year. Keep that motivation in your back pocket, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.